This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour as trading is back underway. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Jennifer Kuiper. We have 35 degrees under partly sunny skies, going up to 38 degrees this afternoon.
The Noon Business Hour, presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Right now, joining us with the latest on the fast-moving coronavirus as it continues to spread to countries around the globe, Michelle Cortez, health reporter for Bloomberg News, based in Minneapolis. Michelle, what are you hearing here? Because it seems like every day we're getting reports that this is spreading, and some of the reports, frankly, don't add up. So what are you hearing?
So what we're hearing is that we still have an awful lot of virus transmission that's occurring inside China. It's happening at a slower rate, which you would expect because it's been there for a while, but it is still spreading. And now we're starting to see these tentacles of infection spreading out to other parts of the world, of course, with the cruise ships, the Diamond Princess and the Westward. We are worried about those, but so far, we haven't seen the really high pace of transmission that is what everyone's worried about.
In general, have those quarantines been working? I know there's been a lot of criticism, especially from the people stuck on the boats or who get quarantined once they get back here to the U.S., but does it appear as though that's working in some way?
Right. Well, so it's important to think about two things. I think people don't think about quarantines in the right way. We just think about it differently. Number one, it's not trying to shut everything down. Today, the WHO said that quarantine slowed the disease spread by about 2 to 3 days in China, and it gives everybody else in the world about 2 to 3 weeks to get ready. So the intent isn't to like bottle it up and have it die. The goal is just to slow down the process so that when it hits other places, we can contain it and then it won't take off. So that's the number one thing to think about. The number two thing is that a quarantine is not to help the people who are being quarantined. It's to help everybody else. So all the folks who are on those cruise ships, of course, are terrified. It's what everyone fears. But the point is that they're not trying necessarily to help those folks. They're trying to protect everybody else in the world from those folks. So this idea of reaching out to them and bringing them back to, you know, their home countries and then quarantining them to, again, keep protecting their home countries, but not have them in such frightening small quarters and so exposed to the virus is kind of a little in the middle, I think.
And Michelle, what's the latest on the quarantine of Wuhan residents? We're talking ground zero. It sounds like it's even tighter than it had been.
You know, it is absolutely tighter. And it's interesting because it's being portrayed as a positive progression in the way that the disease is playing out in Wuhan. They were so overwhelmed for so long that they were just trying to keep track of, you know, take care of the people who were banging on the doors of the hospitals and whatnot. Now that it's slowed down a little bit, they're starting to track everybody. So they're going out to find people. You know, it was they were turning people away. Now they're like, if you've bought cold cough syrup, we're going to come find you. We're knocking on doors and we want to find everybody who might have been infected. So it's good that they're now in a position to more aggressively find and hopefully help those patients. But also it's another sign of just how much China's really cracking down,
Michelle,
on its population.
I'm guessing that you listen in on the CDC calls, which can be pretty dry. But when you are listening to those, is there anything in particular that has caught your attention in the last few days?
You know, it is. The thing that's just caught my attention is the fact that the concern levels are still so very high, and they seem to be getting higher, not lower, when we're looking at other areas. When we're talking about places like Singapore, where they're starting to see a lot of human-to-human transmission in Singapore. We're starting to see some of that in Hong Kong. There was some conversation today about North Korea. Not that there's cases yet in North Korea, but they're worrying that if it gets there, they don't have any methods at all to help them. So it's this idea of now it's going to be the spread. And doctors are saying, give us 3 weeks. In 3 weeks, we're going to know whether this is going to be a worldwide, you know, contagion that's terrible like we're having in China, or if we're going to be able to contain it longer term.
Michelle Cortez, health reporter for Bloomberg News based in Minneapolis. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks so much. Coming up, Apple warns coronavirus causing iPhone shortages.
Shares of Apple are trading lower as the company issues a warning about the coronavirus. We're joined by Art Hogan, chief market strategist at National Securities in New York. Art, in what way is the coronavirus impacting Apple?
Well, Jennifer, two ways. So the first and probably the hardest to get our arms wrapped around is the production of the iPhone. A lot of the manufacturing, a lot of the parts are made in China. Foxconn has four major manufacturing plants in China that make a lot of the parts and assembly for the Apple iPhone. So if they're closed, and they have been, except for two that just opened last week, then Apple just can't produce enough of the product to meet demand. And then the second challenge that Apple has is obviously with the number of people, the millions of people that are quarantined in China right now, the demand for the product in China is obviously going down. So I think both these things bring up what I like to refer to as permanent economic damage versus temporary or destroyed consumption versus delayed consumption. And I think in Apple's case, this is really going to be temporary, and I think it's delayed consumption. If you want a new Apple iPhone and you have to wait a week or a month, you're probably going to do that, versus permanent economic damage. If you happen to be in the travel and leisure space, if you run a casino in Macau, you've lost business, you're not going to get back. So Apple falls in that category of a double-edged sword. It produces products in China and it also sells into China, and they're going through some temporary damage right now.
And short-term in the thinking that supply can be bumped up at some point, maybe even pretty quickly, it might be much more difficult, though, for Apple if it was a case of a competition situation, right?
No, exactly correct. So it's not as though the demand for Apple products is going away. It's just that supply is being temporarily halted, and I think that picks up pretty quickly. We saw two of the Foxconn manufacturing plants reopen last week, so that's good news. That's about 50% of the production there. And then when the demand comes back from China, probably sometime in the second quarter into the second half, when you can actually get out of your house and go shopping again. So I think that all these things are temporary, and I think Apple's pullback of 2% today is reflecting the fact that this is temporary damage, not permanent damage.
Yeah, so investors shouldn't necessarily be worried. This is, you know, whether it's 3 months, 6 months, even a year, at some point this turns around.
Well, I certainly think that's the case. That's not true of all industries, so you have to be careful of which industry you're talking about. Some of the travel damage that was done is permanent, so we're not going to see people traveling again this year for the lunar holiday, one of the busiest travel seasons. So that's affected a lot of the hotels and the casinos and the airlines. And the market has been relatively logical, and the punishment has meted out for those industries. But in terms of Apple and its products, probably get back up to full production within the next 30 days and start meeting the demand that is essentially going to be there. So it's probably a bump in the road for Apple in the near term, but they get out in front of it and made everyone know this quarter is not going to be what they had expected.
What about the chip makers? I mean, a lot of the focus is on Apple because of their report and their guidance, but you have chip makers that are getting hit by this too.
Yeah, and the chip makers fall into that same category that Apple does in that double-edged sword. So they not only do they produce, and a lot of semiconductors are produced in China, but you also have demand coming out of China for a lot of their product. And that space has actually been under pressure more so than any other part of technology. So if you look at the Philadelphia Semiconductor Index, it's up about 4% on a year-to-date basis. It's down today about 1.25%, and this has probably been the most volatile of the sectors in technology for that reason. Not only do you not know when you can get back up and producing your product, but you don't know how much of your demand is being torn away. Again, this falls into temporary demand destruction and not permanent demand destruction, and I think that at some point in time when we get factories back open, whether it's in a month or a couple months down the road, we're going to get production back up and demand back up. But right now, the semis are really the tip of the sword of this coronavirus.
Thanks for the analysis. Art Hogan, chief market strategist at National Securities.
Up next, consumers leave billions of dollars worth of unused gift cards and store credits on the table.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A podcast of the Noon Business Hour available at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app. Half of all Americans possess unused gift cards. It's costing them over $21 billion. Let's discuss this. Ted Rossman is joining us, industry analyst with CreditCards.com in New York. Ted, I'm interested in I guess what the industry would say about this, because on the one hand, they would like people to be buying things with these different gift cards, but they also have cash in the bank that's not being spent.
Yeah, Starbucks reported during their recent earnings call that they have about $2 billion worth of unused gift cards on their books. And that's a key legal distinction here. This is a liability for these companies, and it's especially relevant when a company goes out of business. Like about a decade ago, when borders shut down, customers lost about $18 million worth of unused gift cards. The same thing happened with Toys R Us last year. It's one of the reasons why you should use these cards promptly.
Yeah, Starbucks, you know, they have all of that money just sitting there. As you mentioned, it is a liability. Does Starbucks want to push forward and get people to actually use these? Because they have to keep track of all that.
They do. I mean, they're almost like a bank in a way. When you think about how many deposits they're holding, it really is an awful lot of money. Starbucks has been smart, too, with their mobile payment app, and they really are sticky with their customers. They get people coming back again and again. There's been a lot of changes with gift card laws in recent years. Expiration dates have mostly gone away. If they still have them, the funds have to be good for at least 5 years. And other fees, like inactivity fees, have become less common. When those exist, they can't kick in until after a full year of inactivity. So there's been a lot of consumer protection progress, but people are still not taking full advantage of this real money that they have just sitting around.
So what if we come across some of these cards and we think, well, we're not going to use them at this point. What are the options if you have unused gift cards?
I would say using it is your best option to get the most value. So buy something for yourself, or if it's not a store that you like, maybe you could buy something for a friend or family member for their birthday or some other special occasion. Short of using it, there are some other things you can do. There are resale sites like cardpool.com and cardcash.com that let you sell these unwanted gift cards for something like 70 to 80 cents on the dollar. Another thing you might consider is donating them to charity. You could get a tax deduction and put the money to good use.
And then are there risks in selling gift cards if we choose to go that route to some of these companies? And what about airline vouchers, too?
There can be some risks to selling them. I would tread carefully. I had an example myself with a site a few years ago that has since closed down where I sent them a gift card. They sent me a check, but the check bounced. Now, to their credit, they ended up making good on it, and they even kicked in a little extra to compensate for the bank fee that I incurred. But I do see a number of complaints on sites like the Better Business Bureau and elsewhere from people who either didn't get the right amount or it didn't come promptly enough. So tread carefully. That's why I think using it is best. In terms of airline vouchers, this is one where you have to do the math. I've actually purposely let some of these go unused because even after subtracting the voucher, I would have had to pay more for that ticket than buying a ticket from a rival airline. These typically do expire, usually within a year or two. So do the math, see if you can use it for a trip, but don't be beholden to it if it's not the best deal.
Thanks so much, Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Jennifer Kuiper. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Markets are trading lower today. We'll look at what's moving the numbers.
On Travel Tuesday, how the deadly coronavirus is impacting global travel.
The price of wine is expected to drop significantly over the next few years.
Presidential candidate Mike Bloomberg surges in a new poll and qualifies for tomorrow's Democratic debate.
On Wall Street, the Dow down 191 points. NASDAQ is down 14. The S&P down 12. And oil today is down right about a half a percent.
AccuWeather says windy and chilly with clouds giving way to increasing sunshine today. A high 38. Right now we have 35 at O'Hare, 36 at Midway and the lakefront.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago.
Markets are trading lower, and joining us with the latest on what's moving Wall Street is Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital and author of the book Calculating Risk. Welcome, Michael. And what's your take on the markets today? Is it mostly Apple and coronavirus?
Well, good afternoon, Cisco and Jennifer, and thanks for again having me on. You know, we've had a few data points come out. Empire State Manufacturing was pretty positive. But yeah, I think the tone was set last night when Apple surprised with a revenue warning based on the coronavirus. You know, this is a first quarter warning. The stock's down 2%. And I had some Twitter followers ask me where I thought it would open today, and I said 1% to 2% down. So I wasn't too far off last night in guessing. You know, the thing is the stock is at all-time highs. It's just coming off them right now. So any reason to sell, people are going to take it. But, you know, the fact is it's down 2%. And, you know, the news is really based on the first quarter numbers. And Apple's always been sandbagging their numbers anyway, and they end up coming in better. So I think the market's taking it with stride, and you're seeing just a small downtick in the S&P.
So, Michael, we asked an earlier guest this question. Do you think this is more of a short-term problem for Apple or long-term because of the supply issue?
Well, it depends on what you think is going to happen with coronavirus. Now, it seems like most market participants are modeling it like SARS. And SARS was pretty much over the next summer, and it never came back. Now, if that's what happens, which it's dangerous to model, you know, these things after other viruses, pandemics. But if that does happen, then certainly this is a one-off one-quarter or two-quarter story, and then Apple will rebound and be fine. And that's why the market has hung in there during this scare, because no matter what the numbers show as far as the deaths and people affected, most market participants believe that this is going to be contained and it's not going to become bigger. But I will say that there is a tail risk here that if people are wrong, that the market could sell off 10-20% if this becomes much bigger than anticipated.
So is this where you separate out the investor, that long-term investor, and the person who's just looking to make money quickly in the market? Because then those strategies based on coronavirus and what may happen seem like they'd be different.
Well, you're certainly, the way you'd look at a stock might be different, but everybody's trying to make money. So, you know, what you're trying to do is forecast the future with imperfect information. And like I said, I believe most of the investors are kind of using SARS as a guide, and that may be true. It certainly is modeling out so far fairly similarly. So the question is, does it continue that way? And if so, you'll see in the summer the numbers will drop. As far as deaths and contagion, and then slowly disappear. And you have to wait till second and third quarter to see if that actually plays out. But that definitely is the way the market is looking at it right now.
Let's talk about Walmart and not only their earnings, but also their forward guidance. I found it interesting that they're not really commenting yet on what they think coronavirus is going to do. They say they just don't have enough information yet.
Right, and Walmart is primarily a U.S. story, so coronavirus, even if it gets a little bit worse, will not affect Walmart like it would Apple or some of these other tech stocks. So they're not even, as you said, they're not even modeling it into their forecast, but they are saying that 2021 is going to be $5 to $5.15 versus $5.22 at analyst estimates. It's a slight surprise to the downside. But again, you know, I think investors in the stock's up 1% on this news, which is pretty funny, but surprising. But I think the reason is investors are looking at Walmart and saying, okay, we're going to give you a year or two to turn this company into more of an e-commerce company that can compete with Amazon. And in the meantime, if you miss your numbers, we're not going to ding you too hard. But I think that there will be a time soon, maybe it'll be 6 months to a year from now, that if the turnaround is not obvious, then they will start hitting Walmart stock. So right now, investors are giving them a little bit of time to turn around the company and make it more like Amazon.
Any hints from Walmart management regarding possible upcoming changes?
Well, I mean, the changes are to become more, e-commerce. And actually, e-commerce was up 35% in the last quarter. So they are making strides. And that's, again, why I think the stock's holding up here. But will they be able to take on Amazon in the heart of e-commerce with apparel, with things besides the soft goods that they're good at? I don't know. I don't think so. And I think when those numbers start to show that they can't, the stock may get hit a little bit. But right now, again, you know, it's too early to tell. But yes, they're trying to grow their e-commerce, and they've done a good job so far. It's just, can they take on the big guy when no one else has shown they've been able to do it yet? And we're going to have to wait 6 months to a year to find that answer.
And Michael, you mentioned this at the top, the Empire State Manufacturing Index. Some good news.
Yeah, I mean, the number was 12.9 versus, I think, 4.0 was expected. It's a small uptick, and it is the best since last May. Certainly, this shows that the phase one of the U.S.-China trade deal appears to be counteracting any problems that are caused by the coronavirus. So this was a small positive and probably the reason why the market isn't down more on that Apple news.
Thanks so much for all of the analysis, Michael Palumbo. He is founder of MJP Capital and author of the book Calculated Risk.
Up next on Travel Tuesday, we'll look at how the deadly coronavirus is affecting people's travel plans around the globe.
The only program dedicated to currency events. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Joe Schwederman joining us now, looking at how the deadly coronavirus is affecting travel plans for spring break and beyond. Joe is professor of public services, director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul University. Joe, whether it's a cruise line or someone looking to go to Asia, especially China, it seems like coronavirus and the unknown is going to put some problems there.
Oh, that's certainly right. And it's become a front page story here day after day. And I think the cruise problem, you know, the Princess cruise ship really brought kind of a human element to the story. So people put themselves in those shoes and say, do I really want to risk being put in quarantine? Do I really want to risk being stuck with an outbreak? And that's, you know, kind of bad publicity for the cruise companies. I think though the cruise industry, will, you know, may have a temporary lag. That'll bounce back quick. But boy, air travel, that's a whole different story.
Can you go into detail on air travel?
Well, we're looking at now, you know, this last week's story was, you know, travel to China is really being affected. Airlines have canceled flights through, you know, late April, and they're going to perhaps even push it back further. Now we're seeing airlines in other countries start to really pull back. The latest one, Singapore, you know, which is a big player with the big A380 jets, and they're a powerhouse, and they have canceled a good portion of their flights for the next few months just because people are skittish about traveling to Asia in general. And those kind of reports will be kind of coming out this week that, you know, that the whole Pacific Rim may see a bit of a lag here for quite some time.
So, Joe, I'm looking at people who are more vacationers. If some people are canceling trips to Asian countries where they think they really want to go, are they going somewhere else or are they not? Are they staying home and keeping that money at home?
You know, I think it is going to be just one gangbusters domestic market for air travel this summer. I mean, it just everything's lining up. We got a strong economy and decent fuel prices. And, of course, the MAXs are grounded, so we're going to have a capacity pinch. But we're just going to see, I think, tremendous demand. And Europe, I don't think there's been any sort of a cloud over Europe travel with this. I mean, Europe has some other problems, but mostly this is a Pacific Rim problem. But, you know, that's one vast market. And so let's just hope the China economy doesn't go into some sort of recession, because that could really have ripple effects on all kind of travel.
What kind of a stress is this on thinking on the cruise industry, as it seems like all we're hearing about cruises this day is people quarantined on ships and people getting it on ships, and it's probably not very good for business.
No, that's a good story. We've had a couple big notoriety stories. And I think what's remarkable about cruise is just how big these ships are. I mean, we have 3,500 people on the Japanese cruise ship, and we know the drama that's played out with that, with over 400 getting the coronavirus. So it is like a floating city, if you will. And mostly, though, cruises are just seeing tremendous growth worldwide. So I don't think the product is suffering. But, boy, just in the next few weeks, that bad publicity is going to dampen booking, certainly.
And in general, if you're traveling domestically, really nothing to worry about, at least not yet.
No. We do have, you know, some weird things happening. There was a Japanese traveler that got the coronavirus, a Hawaiian traveler that got the coronavirus. We're trying to figure out how that happened because that passenger hadn't been to Asia. And so there's little lurking issues like that. And, of course, we have cases here in the U.S., but it really hasn't reached any sort of a panic stage here in the U.S. And I think the worst is over, but I am certainly no expert on epidemics.
Thanks so much, Joe Schwederman, professor of public services, director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul University.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
We're at
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.